This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 17th April 2026. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 16th of April 2026. Your readers today are Caroline Hewan.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are 5 more years for Boomtown Festival, TV Gardener Allen at charity shop opening, and teen is praised for dedication to volunteering. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
5 more years for Boomtown Festival. The organiser of a festival that brings more than 70,000 people to the Hampshire countryside has described securing the event until 2030 as a massive milestone. Boomtown Fair, which is held each year at the Matterley Bowl, is renowned for its immersive storytelling, large set bills and eclectic lineups that span genres and generations. It will continue for the next 5 years after it was granted extended planning permission by the South Downs National Park Authority Planning Committee on April the 9th. This comes as the festival gears up for 2026 with a lineup including Skrillex, Madness, Scissor Sisters and Shaggy. Co-founder Luke Mitchell said, "Thursday was a massive milestone. Most people will be totally unaware of this side of things, but securing planning is by far the greatest challenge we face. We're one of the only festivals in the country that needs it due to the sheer scale of our build, and the time we need on site and doing it all within a national park adds a whole extra layer of complexity. We started this application back in 2018. After years being knocked back, the committee finally voted unanimously in our favour. This result belongs to the incredible team and community behind the scenes. It's the result of years of outreach, local charity support and pioneering sustainability. From hydrogen-powered stages and urine-based fertiliser to achieving a 95% recycling rate. It's the result of meticulous planning that respects everything from badger sets and butterfly zones to complex transport routes. The SDNPA approval extends Boomtown's planning permission for one festival per year for 5 more years. Under the new permission, Boomtown can host up to 75,999 attendees, including up to 63,000 ticket holders, with an additional 1,000 local residents able to attend on Sunday. It is allowed a 5-week setup period and 3 weeks for de-rigging. Economic reports estimate the event could inject up to £36.2 million into the economies of Winchester, Hampshire and the South Downs National Park. A study found that Boomtown Fair 2015 generated a gross economic impact of £18.2 million, with a net benefit of £7.4 million for Winchester and Hampshire. The plans were not without opposition. Some residents raised concerns about the impact on surrounding villages, particularly noise and traffic. Alison Matthews from Avington told the committee, "From Wednesday through to Sunday, we hear the bass almost constantly, and by Sunday we are exhausted from lack of sleep, as the music continues until 4 a.m. on 2 or 3 mornings. And as a result of the closures of gaps on the A31, we have more traffic than usual coming through the village, so we can forget about tranquility." Christopher Langford, also from Avington, suggested the committee was being asked to hold its nose and approve the application despite these concerns. In contrast, Shula Real, applicant and one of Boomtown's directors, said there had been 62 letters of support from local residents and only 18 objecting. She said, "We are asking for a 5-year permission because it makes all of our commitments deliverable and deepens our investments in communities around the event." Councillor Craig Manuel of Wickham and Knowle Parish Council supported the application and said the festival brought significant benefits to the National Park, both economically and in raising its profile. Boomtown has also pledged to deliver significant ecological benefits as part of its continued presence, including creating 4.2 acres of new wildflower meadows, enhancing more than a mile of hedgerows, improving 18.5 acres of woodland, and purchasing 88.2 habitat units locally.
TV gardener Alan at charity shop opening. A well-known TV presenter has opened a new charity shop in Winchester. Alan Titchmarsh visited the new Mountbatten charity shop on Jury Street on Thursday, April the 9th, to officiate the opening of the branch and to greet supporters and charity members. Mr. Titchmarsh was appointed as patron for the charity in 2025. The new branch opened in March and is now the 10th shop in Hampshire. It offers a variety of items, including men's and women's clothes, accessories, games, jewellery, bric-a-brac and more. CEO of Mountbatten, Becky McGregor, said, "It's gone really well. It's so lovely to see so many people come to support and such a buzz. Charity shops are an incredible source of our income, which can be difficult in such a challenging financial landscape. There are so many pre-loved goods here, and our charity shops are a real community hub, like a hospice on the high street. It's lovely to see the branches used as a safe space where people can bring their loved ones' clothes and most prized possessions." Mountbatten employ one manager per shop, and the rest are volunteers who dedicate their time to fundraising and helping in the various branches and warehouses. The charity supports more than 2,000 people at the end of their life, and over the last 3 years they have seen an increase in service use of around 70%. 85% of the charity's work is done from inside the homes of those who require palliative care. Mr. Titchmarsh said, "It's a delight to be here and a great honour to take over from Sir Martin White. It was a bit daunting to take over, but I know several people who have used the hospice and I know the worth of the people who run and man it. End-of-life care is so very important, and we live in a world where kindness is undervalued and rarely mentioned. Mountbatten is living proof of this kindness." Sunflowers, which have been painted on the window of the shop, were created by a local artist called Nikki Paints. The flower is the brand logo and symbolises happiness and hope. Adam Grada, area manager at Mountbatten, Hampshire, said, "We wanted to expand the retail portfolio for Mountbatten, and now with 10 branches, it has doubled in shops over the last 4 years. We were trying to get into Winchester for 3 years, and this shop is the right size and layout, as well as being in a brilliant location. It's going really well so far. Every day is different, and you get to meet so many people, whether they are touched by the hospice or not."
Teen is praised for dedication to volunteering. A teenager has been praised for his dedication to helping others. Riley, a pupil at the Henry Beaufort School, received a Mayor of Winchester Community Award during a ceremony at the Guildhall, Winchester, on Thursday, the 12th of March. The award, presented at the ceremony hosted by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ashwal, recognises his commitment to supporting both the school and the wider Winchester community. Miss Bean, head of year at the Henry Beaufort School, said, "We are incredibly proud of Riley for winning this award in recognition of the valuable contribution he makes to our school community. For the past 3 years, Riley has volunteered every morning to support morning duties, helping pupils arrive safely and assisting staff during busy periods. He has also shown leadership in managing transport challenges, ensuring students travel home safely." Riley said, "I'm grateful to have received this award. It shows if you put pride, happiness and ambition into your work, you will succeed with a positive mindset. I've enjoyed being able to help others in school and the community, and I'm thankful for all the support from the Henry Beaufort School who have encouraged me along the way." Outside of school, Riley has supported the local food bank at Unit 12 Food Pantry in Winnell, helping to organise and deliver donations. He is also a member of the Student Council. Within school, he mentors younger pupils and supports reading programmes, consistently demonstrating a strong sense of responsibility and care for others. The Henry Beaufort School described Riley's achievement as a reflection of its values. A school spokesperson said, "At the Henry Beaufort School, we are proud to be an inclusive, comprehensive school, where there are no limitations to individual success. We strive to create a happy, stimulating environment where students can thrive, and we celebrate their achievements at every opportunity." Riley's recognition reflects our core values of pride, ambition and happiness, alongside the high expectations and commitment to making a positive difference that define our school community. "We recognise the important role we play in both the academic and personal development of young people, and we continue to provide the very best for all students." Riley's achievement is a wonderful example of the pride, ambition and positive energy that exists across our school beyond the classroom.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Barnes, Derek Cecil Barnes, at St Michael's Hospice on the 28th of March, aged 91. Dixon, Brian Dixon, on the 26th of March. Hammond, Ruth Hammond, née Kipling, in hospital on the 30th of March, aged 62. Hurst, Dr. Katrina Naomi Hurst, at home on the 10th of March, aged 50. Miller, Peter Thomas Miller, on the 5th of April, aged 91. Osborne, Christine Osborne, at Winchester Hospice, on the 4th of April. Radford, Michael Gordon Victor Radford, at Woodlands House Care Home on the 27th of March, aged 92. Reed, Jean Elizabeth Reed, at home on the 23rd of March, aged 80. Simpson, Ian Patrick Simpson, at Winchester Hospice on the 5th of April. Townend, Ros Townend, at Abbots Barton Care Home on the 31st of March, aged 85. And now we have Christian comment.
We all have doors in our hearts. After Jesus dies, the disciples locked themselves in. Their doors were locked in fear. At the human level, that is easy to understand. They had followed Jesus and he had been put on a cross. Surely they would be on crosses too before the week was out. We all lock ourselves in somehow. We all have doors in our hearts which we keep locked through fear. We are afraid of some parts of ourselves, afraid to let anyone in there. What the disciples experience, however, is that a locked door is no barrier to experiencing the presence of the risen Christ. he is still able to be among them, to speak words of healing and peace, to calm their fears. And it is the same for us. We can try to keep the doors of our hearts locked, to keep God out of some parts of ourselves. But it is an illusion to think that helps, that by keeping them locked, we are keeping ourselves safe. Rather, by keeping those doors locked, those parts of ourselves are trapped. They cannot be healed. They cannot find integration with the rest of us, or the rest of who we are. And so we cannot find peace. Two central messages of the Christian faith are these. Firstly, if anyone wants Jesus to come into their life and make them whole, then even locked doors are no barrier to him. Secondly, that none of us need have any fear of letting Jesus in, for he comes only to bring new life for our souls and for our relationships with other people and with him. The new life Jesus brings to us is not just more of the old life. We sometimes picture it wrongly as a burst of energy to do the same stuff faster, like a kind of divine caffeine burst, like the joke coffee mugs which say, drink coffee, do stupid things faster with more energy. The new life which Jesus brings is not like that. It is about peace, most importantly accepting who we are and the healing we need. We are not perfect. Our lives are not perfect. Our current relationships are not perfect. The people we have interacted with in our lives were not perfect, and that didn't help either. God knows all this, and through it all, he loves us. That is why Jesus teaches a way of deep acceptance and forgiveness, forgiving others and, what is sometimes even harder, accepting that we are ourselves are forgiven. This matters because without forgiving others, our sufferings make us angry, vengeful, and alienated from our true selves, from others, and from God. And without accepting God's forgiveness, we feel all kinds of guilt and shame. So Jesus anoints his church as the place where sins are forgiven, as the place where all can find the path from sins retained to sins forgiven. Although the doors of our hearts are locked in fear, Jesus comes to us and says, "Peace be with you," by Philip Crinks.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have just 7 letters this week, and we'll start off with the first one,
which is entitled "Statistics Were Cherry-Picked," and it's from Richard Evans. I fully agree with Teacher Jones's criticism of Donna Jones's report, distributed at taxpayers' expense with council tax bills, Chronicle, Letters, April the 2nd. Her reports have always been self-promotion, giving little by way of an objective picture of the state of crime and policing in the county. As usual, Ms. Jones has cherry-picked the statistics, though she has worked harder this time and opted to give figures averaged over multiple years. All crime is said to have fallen by 11%. Unfortunately, the timescale is not clear, as the report says since 2022 in one place and last 2 years in another place. Last year's report used figures published by the ONS, Crime in England and Wales, Police Force Area Data Tables, and covered the year to September 2024. The ONS figures for the year to September 2025 are available, Why didn't she use them? Is it because they say that recorded crime in Hampshire, excluding fraud, fell by just 1%? That's a little worse than the 2% fall recorded for England and Wales as a whole. Either these reports should be paid for, in Ms. Jones's case, by the Conservative Party, or better still, standards should be set regarding the use of statistics so voters do get a clear picture. That letter is from Richard Evans, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter on veteran support is from Paul Burrows Gibson. Veterans Dementia Support UK is a Hampshire-based charity working with past and present members of the armed forces and emergency services living with dementia or Alzheimer's. We also support any family members connected to a service family over the years and carers or loved ones. We are keen to connect with those living with dementia, both veterans and non-veterans, and their families, as part of our project to research how hospital admissions and care whilst in hospital can be changed to ensure the time in hospital is a more positive experience and less confusing for those with dementia. The feedback will be used to form a research project to enable a positive change on raising awareness of the differing needs of those living with dementia and suggestions on ways that care could be adapted to the needs of the patient. This can include less noise, raising awareness of dementia veterans living with PTSD, and ways of increasing dedicated volunteers to offer friendship and activities whilst in hospitals. We are grateful for the support that the NHS gives to those with dementia and thank them for the care they provide. This project will enhance that care and support by sharing other people's experiences to lead to change. If you have experienced the care of loved ones living with dementia in a hospital and are happy to share this with us, please email us at veteransdementiauk@gmail.com. That's all one word, veteransdementiauk@gmail.com. And that letter was from Paul Burrows Gibson, the lead coordinator and founder of Veterans Dementia Support UK.
This letter is from Ian Tate. Regeneration is putting lipstick on the proverbial pig. I was intrigued by the letter from Wendy Wyatt, owner of the South Downs Social, based in King's Walk, April the 9th. Miss Wyatt was defending the decision by the developer of the Central Winchester Regeneration Area, Jigsaw, to retain King's Walk. However, Miss Wyatt made no reference to the adjoining Friars Gate building housing, the Open House Deli, projects Poundland, Iceland and Winchester Pilates. Miss Wyatt stated that Winchester does not need more demolition or nostalgia, yet she appears to contradict herself by not making any reference to her neighbouring businesses who are shortly being kicked out when their home is knocked down by Jigsaw and the City Council. I am a regular patron of Miss Wyatt's establishment and I commend her for running a great business, even when it's been flooded again, but I am also a customer at Projects and the Open House Deli, which are brilliant businesses. The decision to retain King's Walk is absolutely all about money and nothing to do with it being a creative enterprise zone. The building is old, and whilst it can be made far more sustainable, there is a strong environmental argument that to demolish it and replace it with a high-quality new building will reduce the environmental impact over a much longer period of time. The old Friars Gate surgery was a high-quality design and had been built as well as King's Walk, but that was demolished. As for nostalgia, our near neighbours, the Coxes, own Taurus, a wonderful emporium of all sorts of fascinating goods in the same unit as Miss Wyatt. That was almost 60 years ago. The Central Winchester Regeneration is nothing of the sort. It's lipstick on the proverbial pig, and the council leader should be ashamed of the lack of proposals. Finally, why is it down to a business owner to defend this mad decision rather than the leader of the city council? And that was from Ian Tate, St James Lane, Winchester.
This letter, entitled Bushfield Objection is Encouraging, is from Chris Gillam. It is encouraging to see the level of objection to the latest application for the development of Bushfield Camp. I imagine, however, the City Council will ignore such concern, as it has consistently done over the last 20 years under both the political regimes of Conservative and Lib Dem. The idea began with the fantasy of certain officers and a Conservative leader for a science park, ignoring the objection that Winchester has no scientific academic base for such an idea. The inspector at the 2012 local plan inquiry ruled that if the site was appropriate to the council's fantasy, then it was appropriate for any general employment. The latest local plan development was the ideal opportunity for the now Lib Dem Council to undo the disaster created by the previous Conservative administration. Not only did the new council fail in this, but it actively contrived to remove the only protective policy that governed what sort of development would be allowed. The development now being proposed would be what Charles Jennings called a monstrous carbuncle. Yet even it is a Trojan horse for worse to come. There is clearly no demonstrated need for this development, and when its invented market fails to materialise, the local plan effectively now says anything goes. What the council has done has left us with the nightmare future of the Solstice Park development at Amesbury on the A303, born of the same science park fantasy, but has become a hideous desert of mega sheds and burger bars. Despite the untiring dedication of Lib Dem councillor Brian Laming in opposing this monster, how has the Lib Dem Council come so enthusiastically to encourage it? How is it able to judge its traffic generation and carbon emission to be consistent with its climate action plan when it opposed such generation at M3 Junction 9? How has it come to accept the willful destruction of 70 years of rewilded landscape with some ludicrously contrived assertion of biodiversity net gain, when it has an action plan that deplores the loss of nature due to inappropriate development? That mild letter is from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
This next letter is from regular correspondent Tony Gaster, and it's entitled Sharing Views. This newspaper provides stories on a lot of local issues. Some of these, like the bus station or river park, generate correspondence. Rarely do we get those responsible answering. Sometimes money, public money, which is our money, is wasted, yet nobody is brought to account. Many public bodies, like the South Downs National Park, make decisions which affect all of us. But are they actually what we, the local community, actually want? I remember years ago, when renovating a church, bodies like the Victorian Society had strong views. We wanted a church fit for use in our time. They wanted a historic monument. I dared to make a comment on a city garden, yet nobody came forward to say that was a better use of our money than building new homes. Fortunately, we live in a free society, and this newspaper allows us to express opinions. It is sad that those in authority say little, and we all continue to moan about potholes. But on that issue, as a cyclist, it can be life-threatening. Mm. I never cease to be thankful to live in such a beautiful place, in spite of the issues. And that letter was from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane in Winchester.
This letter, entitled Football Fan, is from Mark Rowe. On Saturday, I saw, in my view, Winchester City's FC match of the season. I got to the ground, met up with my fellow fans and chatted with Bashley fans as well. There was great banter and more. I also had pie and chips with a non-alcoholic pint, then headed to my seat to watch an epic. Winchester needed 3 points to stay in the playoffs and Bashley needed 3 points to stay in the league. From the Bashley kickoff, Winchester and Bashley played fantastic football. During the first half, sadly, a handball stopped a goal. The player was sent off and Bashley were awarded a penalty on the 25th minute. Harvey Joe Bertrand scored to make it 1-0 to Bashley. Even though down to 10 men, Winchester didn't give up. Then on the 33rd minute, Winchester were awarded a penalty. Ollie Balmer scored for Winchester to make it 1-1. The crowd went wild celebrating. The game finished 2-2 and both sets of fans clapped with teams. The crowd attendance was 423 and someone won over £200 on the 50-50. It was a fantastic day and in my view the match of the season. I saw a lot of positives and I saw Winchester players play for the honour of wearing the famous red and black. The next and last home game is on Saturday, April the 25th, 3 p.m. kickoff. If you want to see a team that is the pride of Winchester, come along and you'll be warmly welcomed. Football is a fantastic sport that brings people together in the spirit of the beautiful game. And that was from Mark Rowe, Taplin's Close Week.
This next letter from Stephen Percy is entitled Trump's War. Is Donald Trump's disastrous and illegal war against Iran a further reminder of just how brilliant populist politicians are at mindlessly wrecking critical institutions, international relationships and norms of civilized behavior, but woeful at the much harder task of building a better world? The folly of Brexit shows how sceptical we should be of those on the political extremes who advocate childishly simplistic solutions to complex global problems. But have we learned the lesson? That's from Stephen Percy, Easton, Winchester.
That concludes the letters. Next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. That will be followed by letter from letter from Westminster by our MP, and then there will be a comment article. So we'll start with the Chronicle comment, Chronicle headline, Chronicle editorial, sorry.
This week's Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment is entitled Another 5 Years for Festival. Boomtown's new 5-year extension is economically a win for our area, bringing 75,000 people to the area each summer through to 2030 will inject millions into local businesses, from supermarkets and pubs to B&Bs, taxis and temporary workers. At a time when high streets are struggling and hospitality margins are razor thin, you do not casually turn your back on that scale of opportunity. But welcoming the economic boost does not mean giving the festival a free pass. If anything, a long-term green light makes it more important than ever that we hold the organisers to the highest standards. The Matterley Basin is a sensitive landscape, and 75,000 revellers, stages, generators and vehicles create an enormous footprint. It is entirely reasonable for residents to demand that the site is returned to them clean, safe and undamaged once the music stops. Equally important is the lived experience of the people who have to endure the festival without choosing it. Noise, light pollution, traffic queues and air quality concerns are not abstract complaints. They shape whether nearby villagers feel this event is something done with them or done to them. That is why Boomtown must treat dialogue with local communities as a permanent two-way process, not a box-ticking exercise in the run-up to each event. If organisers can prove, year on year, that they are serious about cutting their environmental impact and listening to neighbours, then the festival can earn its extended stay.
Danny Chambers, MP for Winchester, writes, "This cost crisis is happening because of Trump's senseless and illegal war on Iran. Now, by the time you're reading this, I hope a genuine ceasefire has been achieved and trade is flowing freely again. But whatever happens, we will be facing many months of higher food prices and energy bills, higher mortgage payments and more expensive transport. Households in rural areas that rely on heating oil were the first to be hit. I heard from many people that prices to refill their tanks with heating oil doubled within days, and heating oil prices are not regulated in the same way Maine's gas supplies are. After Liberal Democrats called on the government to introduce immediate emergency support to those relying on heating oil, HM Treasury announced £27 million of support for households across England and promised to introduce new regulatory measures. We also need to support our farmers who are being hit with big increases in fertiliser prices. That's why I'm backing the Good Food Bill, which will help our rural economy become more resilient to economic shocks whilst aiming to keep food affordable for everyone. Not all the pressures people are facing can be blamed on events beyond our control. The costs we're seeing today are also the result of decades of underinvestment here at home, failing to back British energy and failing to build a public transport system that gives people real choice in how they get around. Instead, we've seen Conservative-run councils cut vital rural bus services, including many here in Winchester and across the Meon Valley. In recent weeks, I've spoken to families, pensioners and local businesses who are deeply worried about the rising cost of getting around. Older residents who once relied on regular bus services, axed by Stagecoach after county council funding cuts, have been forced back into their cars, only to be hit by soaring petrol prices. If the war continues to drive high fuel costs in the months ahead, we cannot simply hope for the best. We need an emergency plan to keep the country moving. That means restoring bus services wherever possible and bringing fares down to £1. It means cutting fuel duty to ease pressure at the pump, lowering rail fares and scrapping VAT on electric vehicle charging so that everyone, whatever their circumstances, can save money on travel. These measures do come at a cost, but the truth is we cannot afford to do nothing. Standing back while our communities struggle and our economy stalls would cost far more in the long run. While these emergency measures can help us in the short term, we need to prepare for the future. No war or naval blockade can impede the sun shining on Britain. No sanctions can stop the wind from blowing. We can and must invest to build resilience and energy sovereignty so that we're no longer dependent on foreign oil and gas imports the next time a crisis hits. Danny Chambers, MP for Winchester."
And this piece is a comment written by Yinon Ezra, and he entitles it, "Hopefully the ethos of help is continued." The recent decision to set up four unitary councils in Hampshire, who will do everything that the current county council and district councils do separately, the island is one already, is to be the new structure for local government. This reorganisation will be with us for years, certainly, well after the next general election. Shadow elections for the new councils are next May, with them going live the year after. The new mayor for Hampshire and the Solent will also be elected at the same time. These all-purpose councils are certainly larger than our current district councils, Most will have populations of around 500,000 people, as research has demonstrated that a larger tax base makes the unitary setup more viable. Also, doing away with the two tiers will save on everything from the mayors of 12 districts and the county chairman to hosts of chief executives, chief officers, rationalised property holdings, and hopefully create a single one-stop service or call centre for council taxpayers, improving some of the current confusion around who does what. The county has a well-established setup for disposing of waste. It has often been used as an exemplar for efficiency. There are large deals with some utilities, particularly electricity, which many important services, for example schools, rely on, together with driving a hard bargain with private social care providers, making sure IT providers give value for money. The county's large property portfolio means that partnerships with the private sector have been possible for maintenance and construction, delivering real economies. There are no doubt other examples. Hopefully the new councils will see the wisdom of not dismantling countywide systems that deliver and work. It's the joining up of property holdings that offers huge opportunities. Many sites currently used for council offices may be ideal for new housing. There are also opportunities here to use new technology to redesign how services are delivered. The other important early task for the councils is to reassure the voluntary sector, who care so much for so many, that they will continue to be supported. Local government has a long tradition of wanting to do its very best for local people. Hopefully, this ethos will continue.
Some what's on items. On Friday the 24th and Saturday the 25th of April, at the King's Worthy Jubilee Hall, the Worthy Players will be performing Rumours, a farce by Neil Simon. From Friday the 1st of May to Monday the 4th of May will be the Winchester Chamber Music Festival, which is held at various venues around the city. On Sunday the 3rd of May at the Theatre Royal, there will be a George Michael tribute act featuring Steve Mitchell at 7:30. From Thursday the 7th of May to Saturday the 9th of May, Made Winchester Craft and Design Festival in the Cathedral. On Saturday the 16th of May, the Winchester Mayfest with Morris dancing, folk music and traditional dance centred round the High Street and St Morris's Covert. And on Thursday the 21st of May, Winchester Talking Newspaper Annual General Meeting at Littleton Memorial Hall at 2 p.m, to which you are all welcome. The speaker will be Keith Hatter on accessing arts for those with a visual disability, and this will be followed by tea. Sunrise at the moment is around at 6 o'clock in the morning. Sunset is at 8 p.m. in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And the number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
Champions for Energy. Practical support is making homes warmer and more energy efficient. The scheme is thanks to a free service provided by the Parish Council in Littleton and Hairstock. Residents can book a home visit from trained energy champions who offer tailored advice on improving insulation, reducing drafts, and optimising central heating systems. A Hairstock resident, Anne Slaughter, said, "The advice I received was very useful, and my house is now definitely warmer. I have recommended the Energy Champion to some of my neighbours too." The parish council also lends out a thermal imaging camera to help identify heat loss and areas where cold air may be entering the home. Energy Champions are also active in nearby communities, including Colden Common, South Wanston, Waltham Chase and Swanmore. The service has been operating for 18 months and forms part of the council's wider Parish Action on the Climate Emergency, PACE, group. In addition to practical guidance, the volunteers signpost residents to the My Home Made Better scheme, which offers free and impartial home energy advice through funding from the Energy Redress Scheme.
Trust's vision for City Centre Future. The City of Winchester Trust is proposing radical ideas to reduce traffic in the city centre. They include the removal of some car parks for housing, businesses and open spaces, the stopping of through traffic by the use of bus gates and fewer one-way streets. A major investment in public transport would see coach services bringing people in from the surrounding towns and villages to reduce traffic into the city, with new park and ride sites along the routes. The Trust itself is proposing a new vision for the city and recently heard from transport planner Richard Lewis. In a recent issue of Trust News, Mr. Lewis said, "We should strive to retain the low traffic characteristics of the most popular places and demand more of them. To achieve this, we need a transport vision and concept which starts to move private motor traffic away from places we want to regenerate and enable walking, cycling and public transport. We might start to master plan the central areas to identify areas where we can replace roads with streets and car parks with new homes, businesses and public squares, restoring the Saxon Street and river pattern and opening up new public spaces where people want to spend time." Mr. Lewis also suggests removing the bus station to terminate buses differently, as well as reviewing the one-way system and introducing bus gates through which only public transport can go. He added, "We might consider a trial of luxury express coach services to bring people into Winchester from surrounding towns and villages. If the trial works, it could be coupled with park and ride car parks dotted at intervals along the routes, including on the edge of the smaller settlements, to capture car traffic earlier and reduce congestion on Winchester's approaches." Bob Waldridge, the new chairman of the Trust since the retirement of Keith Lehman last year, wants to hear public views on how people and cars can coexist and has been speaking to stakeholders to discuss ideas. He hopes ideas can be fed into a review of the Winchester Movement Strategy, which the county and city councils adopted in 2019. Mr. Lewis said traffic needs to be better managed. 7% of through traffic goes through the city. We want to encourage people in the city and make it as attractive as possible. We need to close down the ability to drive through Winchester. If you restrict traffic, then buses can play a bigger role. People will use something if it is good. Mr. Waldridge, former head of architecture at Hampshire County Council, said, "We want to hear from people about what they want. Politicians need to hear from people about change. On the idea of park and ride on the edge of smaller towns in the district, such as Alresford, and express buses into the Winchester, he said, "You have to provide alternatives before you can restrict car use, but you have to restrict parking, otherwise the alternatives won't work." Among the car parks that the Trust would be looking at developing would be St. Peter's off Gordon Road and next to North Walls.
New COVID-19 vaccinations for vulnerable. A new COVID-19 vaccination programme has been launched to help protect the most vulnerable in the community. The campaign is now underway across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, running until June the 30th and targeting care home residents, people aged 75 and over, and individuals aged 6 months and over with weakened immune systems. People considered to have a weakened immune system include those living with HIV, people who have received an organ, bone marrow or stem cell transplant, undergoing radiotherapy or chemotherapy, with genetic conditions affecting the immune system, or taking medications that suppress immune response. Dr. Zayed Hirmiz, GP and Deputy Chief Medical Officer for NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "Although life has largely returned to normal for many of us, COVID-19 has not gone away and continues to circulate within our communities. For those who are more vulnerable, whether due to age or underlying health conditions, the spring vaccination offers important additional protection and helps lower the chances of becoming seriously unwell or needing hospital care. People may question why further doses are needed, but this is because viruses naturally evolve over time. Vaccines are updated accordingly."
I have to express an interest here. I sing with the Wainfleet Singers, and this is the review of our last concert. And it's written by David Owen Norris. The reputation of Elgar's most famous choral work is so firmly established that even those at Winchester Cathedral on March the 27th, who had never heard it before, knew they should expect something special. They were not disappointed. In an age of music at the flick of a switch, music perfectly performed thanks to edit after edit, take after take, live performance is ever more necessary to remind us of the thrill of jeopardy. For those who know the piece, excited anticipation conjures up specific questions. The two great tenor climaxes, the laughter of the demons, the consolation of the angel, the anguished intercessions of the other angel, the model of the angel of agony, how will they work in this fleeting performance, here, in this place, on this particular evening? And the pacing? Elgar's music never goes like clockwork, and conductors need something of the skill of the racing driver as they negotiate his turns and twists. Something of the strength and patience of the mountaineer as they tackle his lofty heights. The first section of The Dream, where Gerontius describes his own experience of death, this emptying out of each constituent, in Cardinal Newman's words, eases the performers in gradually. The choral parts are reflective, rarely rising above the dynamic mark P. There's a marvellous moment where Elgar asks his singers for PPP and then still asks them to get much quieter still. The tenor soloist, too, begins quietly, and Andrew Kennedy electrified me with his very first line, a perfect representation of the voice of a dying man. Representation, not imitation. Kennedy understands the difference between art and mere raw emotion. The heroic high notes that arrive later require, and thrillingly received, very different treatment, but Kennedy had already defined his terms. And as the soul of Gerontius in the second part, "I want to sleep and now I am refreshed," he again found exactly the right tone of voice. The orchestral prelude, which shows us most of the work's themes and tunes, begins quietly too, almost hesitantly. Andrew Lumsden scrupulously observed Elgar's many marks of expression. I was particularly struck by the snarling obsessive crescendos in the brass. The admirable players of the English Chamber Orchestra at first gave the impression that they were used to a less active beat than Lumsden's, but as the piece progressed they threw any caution to the winds under their vigorous leader, Offa Falk. By the time Gerontius encountered a band of marauding demons as he passed through the veil, Lumsden's ambitious speed worked perfectly, and the chorus rose to its occasion with some of the most unpleasantly devilish laughing imaginable. Again, a representation, not an imitation. As the laughter faded away, the double bassoon, the lowest instrument of all, played music's most sinister interval, a diminished fifth, so sinister that its nickname is Diabolicus in Musicar, at the very bottom of its compass, a pithy example of Elgar's inveterate love of puns and his unrivalled mastery of orchestral effect. The choir's greatest triumph came at the moment of greatest jeopardy, the shout of praise, like the deep and solemn sound of many waters. This moment absolutely must not disappoint. FFF, says Elgar, that means very, very loud, and it did not. The wall of sound that proceeded from them was overwhelming, but both the chorus and the semi-chorus could be gentle too, delicately mastering the perilous writing for the Angelicals and the solemn modal litany of Noah, Job and Moses. I first heard Gerontius live in the ABC cinema in Northampton. The power and the glory of the work easily transcended the venue. But those lucky enough to have heard it for the first time in Winchester will have experienced one indelible moment they were never hear again, as the glorious building made its own contribution. As the echoes gradually died away at the end of the colossal hymn of praise, we became aware of an incredibly deep organ note hanging on, pianissimo solo, writes Elgar, on the organ's lowest note. George Castle, the Wayne's accompanist, knows all the secrets of Winchester's mighty organ and unerringly selected the double open wood, a huge box the width of a large person and 32 feet tall. An unforgettable combination of sound and architecture. Andrew Foster Williams was a noble counterpart to Kennedy, his resonant voice enthroned by Elgar's scoring for trombones. We had to wait till after the interval to hear Dame Sarah Connolly, who was revisiting the role for the first time in years. Her angel radiated calm authority and took confident advantage of all the optional high notes that a hopeful but realistic composer had put in small type. The angel's farewell that concludes the work is Elgar's ace up his sleeve, a most beautiful tune that he wisely kept out of the prelude so that its freshness could the better enchant us. The supporting chorus, Come Back, O Lord, How Long, was movingly sung and brought the work's emotional journey to a deeply satisfying end. Dr. Lumsden had climbed his Everest and raced his McLaren past the checkered flag. We applauded to the echo.
New food festivals celebrate the county's culinary talent. Two new food festivals, Food in the Gardens, will serve up the best of Hampshire's culinary scene in a celebration of flavour, community and local talent. CW Events Hampshire has announced a partnership with Sir Harold Hillier Gardens to host the two-day festivals on April the 24th to the 25th and again on October the 9th to the 10th. A curated lineup of producers will be featured at each event, offering tastings and live demonstrations. Each festival will blend artisanal foods with seasonal favourites. Claire Walker, founder of CW Events Hampshire, said, "We're so excited to be bringing these food festivals to Sir Harold Hillier Gardens. It's a chance for people to enjoy amazing local food, watch live demos and explore the beautiful surroundings. These events are all about celebrating our local producers and giving visitors a taste of the very best Hampshire has to offer." The lineup of traders at the food festival includes Adrianos Gelato, serving artisan indulgence, All Counties Catering with their hog roast and loaded fries, and Beer Tap Inns Limited, offering a selection of gin, vodka and rum. Festival goers will also find Chickie's Luxury Eggs with gourmet scotch eggs, Hulk's Smoked Beef and Hog bringing Texas-style barbecue, and Cottinus Foods with baklava, olives and other sweet delights. New Forest Tea Company will be there with premium teas alongside Nonsuch Mushrooms, offering fresh local produce, and 2-in-1 olive oil showcasing rich extra virgin oils. For something a little different, Whimsical Forager will be serving botanical liqueurs, while Maria's Cakes and Bakes brings cakes, cookies and brownies. Marzilicious offers handcrafted marzipan creations, and Jack's Backhouse will have fresh bakery treats. Rounding things off, Saxnot Meadery will be pouring traditional mead. On Friday lunchtime, people are invited to enjoy some laid-back live music in the courtyard, courtesy of Paul Hewardine on acoustic guitar. The festivals are open to both garden visitors and the general public, providing a full day of food and nature. Attendees can explore the gardens while sampling products from some of Hampshire's most talented food makers. This collaboration aims to highlight the region's vibrant food scene, supporting small businesses and encouraging visitors to discover new flavours in an outdoor setting. CW Events Hampshire will share regular updates across its social media channels as the festivals approach. Updates will include announcements of participating producers, festival highlights, and behind-the-scenes sneak peeks in the lead-up to the 2026 events.
Bereaved mothers lace up trainers for half marathon. Two bereaved mothers took on the London Landmarks half marathon. Beth Simpson and Emma Zinn ran 13.1 miles on Sunday, April the 12th, in memory of their babies, and to raise funds for the Forget Me Not Fund, part of Hampshire Hospital's charity. Both mothers received support from the charity following the deaths of their children. Beth's son Joshua died just 10 days after birth from the herpes simplex virus, HSV. Beth said, "I was offered immediate support and they became my guardian angels. I joined a group with others who had experienced the same loss, and meeting them, people who knew what it was like, really helped me. Running has helped me immensely mentally. It gives me a focus. And when I run, I think about Joshua, and that really helps me get through." Emma made the devastating decision to end her pregnancy at 19 weeks after her daughter was diagnosed with Edwards syndrome, and she was told it was unlikely her baby would survive to full term and could already be in pain. She said, "It's a decision no parent ever wants to make, but knowing she could already be suffering, we just couldn't put her through that. I thought I'd just go home and be on my own, left to cope with the decision we'd made. But the charity's Forget Me Not Fund was there for me. It meant so much to have their support that when I was ready, I wanted to give something back so they'd be there for other families." The pair also took part in last year's half marathon, forming a bond with other bereaved parents running to raise funds for the charity. They were joined this year by Hannah Vardy, whose sister Rachel Josie lost her daughter Everly at 20 weeks. Rachel said, "We went for the routine 20-week scan and was told that her heart wasn't beating anymore. We went to Winchester, where we were blessed to spend 2 days in the butterfly suite. We were so lucky to have that time to build memories." The charity's bereavement service supports families who have lost a baby from 12 weeks into pregnancy up to 28 days after birth. Funds raised through Hampshire Hospital's charity are used to support parents in a variety of ways to ensure parents do not feel isolated.
Supporting older people. A 5-year project has been launched to support older people in staying active, independent and socially connected. Age Concern Hampshire has announced Living Well in Later Life, a programme supported by the National Lottery Community Fund that will deliver physical activity and well-being sessions across the county. The scheme aims to help older people remain independent, engaged and healthy by offering a range of accessible activities at Age Concern Hampshire's care and wellbeing centres and other community venues. Sessions will focus on improving strength, balance and overall wellbeing, with an emphasis on building social connections to reduce loneliness and isolation.
steaming in strong after 50 years. A beloved steam train is marking 50 years at the Watercress Line. The Uri Locomotive Society's ULS S15 class, number 30506, will feature in the Heritage Railway's Spring Steam Gala, taking place from April the 24th to the 26th. Originally built by the London and South Western Railway at Eastleigh Works in 1920, the freight locomotive was saved from a scrapyard in Barry, South Wales, and brought to the Mid-Hants Railway in April 1976. It has since become a favourite among enthusiasts, recently debuting a new British Railways Early Crest livery. During the three-day gala, visitors can ride behind 30506 as it navigates the Alps gradients between Alsford and Alton. The event also serves as a platform to support the Society's current major project, restoring sister Eastleigh built locomotive 499 into original condition. Restoration work on number 499 is progressing at Ropley. The ULS is inviting all gala attendees to visit its sales stand to learn more about this project and contribute to the final push to return the second Uri S15 to steam. Tickets for the Spring Steam Gala can be booked via the Watercress Line.
Ex-councillor dedicated to care dies at 91. A major figure in Hampshire Conservative politics for decades has died aged 91. Felicity Hineson served on the County Council for many years representing the Meon Valley. Before her retirement in 2013, she had risen to senior positions including Executive Member for Adult Social Care and also for Children's Services. As Executive Member for Adult Social Care, she was involved in controversial decisions, including the closure of the Cornerways home in Kingsworthy in 2012. In the late 1980s and early 1990s, she was chairman of the Winchester Conservative Association and embroiled in the controversy over the sitting MP John Brown, which led to his deselection and replacement by Jerry Malone in 1992. Mrs. Hineson was also an honorary alderman of Winchester and an honorary fellow of Winchester University. Her long contribution to local politics and public life was recognised nationally when she was appointed MBE in 1991. She served as a director of the Hampshire Buildings Preservation Trust, Hampshire Foundation of Young Musicians, the National Children's Bureau, and the Southern and South Eastern Tourist Board. She died at home on March the 13th. For many years, she was church warden of St. Peter and St. Paul Church in Exton.
Fifteen thousandth flight landmark for the Air Ambulance Lifesavers. The county's life-saving air ambulance charity has reached a major milestone with its 15,000th flight. Hampshire and the Isle of Wight air ambulance doctors, dispatchers, pilots and paramedics completed the mission on Wednesday, April the 1st in Hook. The crew treated a patient in need of emergency critical care before transferring them to hospital in a road ambulance to allow them to continue providing necessary treatment en route. This landmark flight is part of more than 23,000 emergency responses by the charity since its first flight in 2007, including 8,434 by road. Kevin Podger, one of the many people helped by the air ambulance, described the time he went into cardiac arrest while cycling in Lymington High Street in October 2025. Crews arrived at the scene, placed Kevin into an induced coma and transferred him to hospital by road ambulance. Kevin said, "This brings home how crucial both early CPR and defibrillation are. You are totally reliant on actions of bystanders. people asking, does this person need CPR, calling 999 and then locating the nearest AED. I wasn't breathing and I was going grey. Thankfully, they recognised that I needed CPR straight away and just got stuck in. I'm eternally grateful for the help and support I had on scene and thereafter. To have the skills and knowledge of the air ambulance crew from an organisation which is charitably funded by donations is remarkable and completely surprising, and it's well worthy of our support. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance responds to incidents across the region, including cardiac arrests, falls from height and assaults. Each mission costs the charity around £3,500, funded entirely by public donations. The air ambulance team can deliver hospital-level care on scene, performing procedures such as thoracotomies, surgical incisions into the chest wall, or limb amputations. Richard Corbett, CEO of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, praised the team and supporters. Richard said, "I'm immensely proud of the efforts from everyone who has made this achievement possible. For many of those patients, it will be the worst day of their lives. However, thanks to the extraordinary dedication from hundreds of expert crew members, charity staff and volunteers over the years, coupled with the generosity of our wonderful supporters, our team can try and make that day slightly better and give those patients the best possible chance of survival and recovery." The service was recently rated outstanding by the Care Quality Commission.
What a milestone for e-bike specialist after 5 years. An e-bike specialist is marking 5 years in business. The cycle company in Shawford opened its doors in April 2021 and has since grown into a trusted name in the electric bike market. Over the past 5 years, it has built a reputation for quality products, strong customer service, and a welcoming approach for cyclists of all levels. The company's journey began with the sale of its first bikes and the launch of its Shawford shop, which quickly became a hub for the local cycling community. The team has focused on helping riders choose the right bike and offering support before and after each sale. As business grew, the cycle company expanded its e-bike range to include brands such as Estali in March 2022, Mondrager in February 2023, and Gazelle in January 2025. This has allowed the company to offer everything from lightweight and foldable models to gravel, mountain and e-cargo bikes. A major milestone was the opening of the Romsey-Estali partnership store in October 2024. Tim Corcoran, Managing Director, said, "This wasn't just a new shop. It reflected years of collaboration with Estali and a shared commitment to making high-quality, stylish and practical e-bikes accessible to more riders." Another key achievement came in November 2024 with the sale of the company's 1,000th e-bike, further cementing its presence on the market and the trust it has built within the community. In May 2025, the cycle company saw four visitors from New Zealand hire e-bikes and complete a self-supported ride from Land's End to John O'Groats, capturing the company's adventurous spirit and customer focus. Tom added, "These milestones reflect not just the growth in numbers, but the community, experiences and adventures that the company has helped to create. While in-store sales remain a core part of the business, the cycle company has also grown its online presence to reach customers beyond Hampshire. Recognising that buying an e-bike online can feel daunting, the company has focused on building trust and offering expert advice throughout the process, from selection to delivery and after-sales care." Tom said, "This approach ensures that buying an e-bike online is as reassuring and enjoyable as visiting the shop in person, giving riders confidence and peace of mind wherever they are." The company's focus on customer support and community has been central to its growth and success. The cycle company plans to continue expanding its range, developing partnerships and supporting cycling adventures across the UK. The team remains committed to making e-bikes accessible, enjoyable and reliable for all types of riders.
Church is fully consecrated after 154 years. After 154 years, a church in Winchester has been fully consecrated. St Paul's Church on St Paul's Hill had its nave consecrated by the Bishop of Winchester, Philip Mountstephen, on April the 12th. Part of the church was consecrated in 1872 by the then Bishop of Winchester, Samuel Wilberforce, who deemed the chancel ready for consecration, but the nave not. Following a petition from church wardens and a meeting of the parochial church council of the St Matthew Parish of Winchester on July the 2nd, 2025, it was agreed that the remaining areas of the church should be consecrated. The Bishop of Winchester said, "It's a great joy to be here today. This is an historic day. It's a lovely church, community, and it means much more than the building. It's about the mission of this church and this calling to live and serve the wider world and the local community in the name of Jesus Christ." The nave was renovated during the COVID period and was previously only licensed for church services. During the consecration, the Bishop of Winchester sensed the building and anointed the church with chrism in each corner. Rector and Reverend Dr. Jonathan Rowe said, "This is a parish church and a local church. We want to serve our local community."
College taking vibrant garden to the Chelsea Flower Show. A college will return to one of the world's most prestigious garden shows with a concept inspired by natural dyes and the power of plants. Sparsholt College will showcase Wash Day Hues at the 2026 RHS Chelsea Flower Show in May 19th to the 23rd, exploring the relationship between fabrics and plants and how vibrant colours can be created using natural plant-based dyes. The product is being brought to life by the college's multiple medal-winning Chelsea design team, which includes both full-time and part-time mature horticultural students. It will feature a variety of plants, many of which can be grown in the UK climate, that can be used as natural dyes and scents. Lucy Lewis, horticultural lecturer at Sparsholt College and garden designer, said, "This year's garden is exciting. We've had so much interest already, and it turns out loads of people have a curiosity for these old crafts. I'm excited to see the things that the students and I will learn along the way. This year's theme is looking at the relationship between plants in our garden and how they dye fabrics, with a little bit of a laundry theme as well. We're looking at plants that people can grow very happily in the UK climate and that produce wonderful colours when processed properly." For many learners, this is their first experience of the RHS Chelsea Flower Show. T-level ornamental horticulture lecturer Cam said, "I'm excited and there are lots of opportunities involved with this experience. I've learnt a lot already, particularly in the dye workshop, and it's nice to know all the different plant materials that can be used to dye fabrics."
Talk to explore centuries of riot and rebellion across the county. Hampshire's long and turbulent history of unrest will take centre stage at a public lecture this month. Historian Dr. Barry Sherlock will deliver the inaugural Captain Swing Memorial Lecture on Wednesday, April the 22nd at 6:30 p.m. at St. Bartholomew's Church in Hyde, Winchester, exploring centuries of riot and rebellion across the county. Organised by the English Project, the event will focus on the 1830 Spring Riots and their place in a wider tradition of civil disorder. Professor Bill Lucas, chair of the English Project, said, "The Church of St. Bartholomew's is particularly appropriate for our inaugural Captain Swing Riot Lecture. Many of the Swing rioters were sentenced to serve jail sentences in the Winchester Bridewell, which stood immediately adjacent to the church. Prisoners who died would often have been buried in the St. Bartholomew's graveyard." Dr. Sherlock's talk, titled "Riots, Riots, and More Riots," will trace the roots of unrest from the Whitchurch cow riot of 1600 to the explosive events of 1830, examining both local grievances and broader movements for change. The presentation is the first in a planned series of 5 annual lectures leading up to the bicentennial anniversary of the Swing Riots in 1830. Edward Fennell, the bicentennial coordinator, said, "The civil disorder of 1830 was prompted by the arrival of new technology at a time of economic crisis. You don't have to look too far to see parallels with what is happening today." An exhibition titled Riots on Record, recently displayed at the Hampshire Record Office, will also be on show to accompany the lecture. Tickets cost £13 and will be available at the door on the night with payment by cash only. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the lecture begins at 6:30 p.m.
Easter Bunny lands at hospice by helicopter. The Easter Bunny made a heartwarming arrival by helicopter. The special visit took place at Naomi House and Jack's Place in Sutton, Scotney, where children, young adults and their families enjoyed a day filled with festive fun and surprises. The Easter Bunny was flown in by the Gazelle Squadron display team, who handed out Easter eggs during a day of fun organised by the care team. Claire Potterton, play and activities team leader at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "We had a lovely day that brought smiles to all the children and young adults we care for and their families. To see everyone so relaxed and happy was really special, and it was the perfect day all round. The day was packed with activities, including a visit from some alpacas from Barefoot Barn, Salisbury, who gave everyone the chance to walk them and have a pat and a stroke. Children also took part in Easter biscuit decorating, a scavenger hunt, crafting baskets and flower crowns, and Easter-themed messy play. The catering team at the hospices even created helicopter and alpaca-shaped biscuits for the occasion. Each family received a chocolate egg from the Easter Bunny. The Gazelle Squadron display team has been supporting the hospices with these visits for more than a decade."
Zoo names new rhino calf. A baby rhino that was born on Mothering Sunday has been named. Amali, a female white rhino calf, was born on March the 15th at Marwell Zoo to 8-year-old Zara. The name Amali means hope in Swahili, and she will be an important part of the white rhino conservation as part of the European breeding programme as she grows up. A zoo spokesman said that she is already full of personality and is already beginning to venture outside with her mum, Zara. Zara joined Marwell in 2021 and was believed to be pregnant for about 16 months before she gave birth. Amali's dad, Jabari, arrived in Hampshire from Dublin in 2015. Both Amali and Zara can be seen by the public as Marwell's Rhino House remains open for visitors. Amali's birth was made possible thanks to Marwell's involvement in the European Breeding Programme, which helps threatened species across the continent and supports both captive and wild populations. That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who are Caroline Hewan.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you are able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you could also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.